Today, answers matter more than ever before. That's why IBM is helping businesses manage customer questions with Watson Assistant. It's conversational AI designed to work for any industry. Let's put smart to work. Visit ibm.com/Watson Assistant.
What's up? Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Our buddy Clint Yates hanging out for another segment. Mike Trudell will join us at 1140. We'll talk to him about his porn stash if you haven't seen him on social media recently. Tune into the ESPN Daily Podcast with our friend Mina Kimes, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily with our pal Mina Kimes, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. You've occasionally rocked the porn stash there, Yates. I've seen you before.
Yeah, when I was a teenager in the 90s and I didn't have anything better to do. But that's not a go-to look. I can't even grow that much hair on my face anymore. I'm not even going to lie. Those days are over, so... I wish I was one of those dudes that had the versatility option on the face with the facial hair, but that's not really it. I just got to shave it off and let these pretty pores show through, George.
Yeah, I'm with you too. I look like I just have a really dirty face is basically what I look like when I don't shave.
That's where I'm at.
I'd still let it go for a couple of days because I don't, like you, I don't grow a lot of hair. How is the fire alarm situation
not
going?
Not great, Bob. I've ripped out two batteries. I'm changing tires like a maniac here. I feel like I'm on Chase Elliott's team. That's an inside NASCAR joke for those of you who have been following the races. And I don't know what's going on. Apparently, they're going off all over the building, so you're just going to have to deal with it. Happy National Work From Home Day.
Yeah.
I never thought that a daggone fire alarm is going to crush my broadcasting career, but apparently it is.
Yeah, it's going to be fun. So the ones in your apartment are done?
They're both done. I took the batteries out of both of them, and so I don't understand who... Listen, fire safety is obviously the number one most important thing in a lot of different households. I have a lot of family members who are firefighters. However, the technology that allows these things to continue beeping after being deactivated in scenarios in which they are not actually picking up smoke is at the most aggravating. And that's the situation we're going through.
All right. Speaking of aggravating, I know a lot of people are aggravated by the way Major League Baseball's going. Yeah. You and I have talked about this a little bit. My position hasn't changed. Like, I'm with the players. Like I just don't feel like the messaging, the public messaging of this makes sense. And I get it's hard to silence 1,100 union members. Like I get that. I just don't think that is a winning proposition ever, really.
Well, here's the thing. The question is about what are you actually trying to win? Now, if it's the court of public opinion, well, then I think that's a gamble worth taking because, as I said yesterday, I said this on ATH because I was really hot about it and a lot of people were kind of coming after me and I was like, look, there's a fundamental misunderstanding here. The owners have a communicative advantage because you don't know how much money they're actually making on baseball. So when you tell me that the players are passing up amounts of dollars that are nonsensical to the average person, think about where that money goes back to. It's not like this just goes into some fund to help the rest of unemployed America in terms of what we should or should not be taking. It goes back to the owners. Yeah. And you don't even know what those numbers are versus what they could or could not be taking should the situation be normal. So for just the average baseball fan, when you tune into these battles of labor, understand what you're looking at. You do not have the full information from the side that has the most money. In this particular case, they also have no real leverage outside of, hello, a global pandemic. And that, to me, George, is what seems most unseemly about this. You're kind of relying on something that is affecting everyone when you're the ones in the power position and blaming your best stars. Dude, that's just not cool for the growth of the game. Never mind all this other stuff about who should have this much money and who shouldn't. It doesn't feel right beyond just the average labor disagreements to me.
Well, the owners didn't play fair from the get-go because it's funny because they leaked the information about the prorated salaries based on a 50-50 revenue split, and it wasn't even in the proposal initially. So we found that out later, and they just did it to take a temperature check and to bait the players into having that discussion, knowing full well they were going to put it in the proposal.
Which is slimy. And on top of that, if you're not going to pay minor leaguers to just exist, well, then you've indicated that you don't actually care about whether or not the game comes back. If you're going to talk about having taxi squads for Major League Baseball teams to try to get things back on track when you do finally start playing – the health and the condition of the guys that aren't just the ones on the major league roster is important. And if you're going to sell me on the notion that baseball can't survive if these guys don't take pay cuts, how's baseball supposed to survive if there is literally no minor league development happening over the summer either? The two things can't be separated just because people don't look at the top flight of the game as the same as the rest. The major leaguers come from somewhere. They don't just fall out of the sky. They are developed through farm systems. So if you're telling me as an ownership group, hey, I'm not paying my guys, but actually I need this money to be knocked back on the books, dude, you're not in the best interest of the game, and that matters to me as much as anything. One season in 2020 or the CBA down the line, which is what this is really about.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, I get that. I think that, look, Jeff Passan was just on with me, and he thinks that maybe this is the schoolyard bully situation where you finally step up to the bully and just punch him back in the face, and the bully's like, okay, fine. You know what I mean? And then they'll come to the table and be more reasonable with this. So we'll see. Like, the players are going to come back. And look, if it's just an 82-game season, right, and they want half their money, like, I get that. Like, that's fair to me. They shouldn't have to subsidize the billionaires. I'm with you. I just wish that there was more centralized messaging, for example. Like, you know, the NBA, there were some, you know, moments early on in this where there were some discussions about money. Now, granted, a little easier, not apples to apples, because their season is already in play, although there was some talk about finances early on and about how much money will get distributed moving forward based on the potential of losing games because there hasn't been any cancellations yet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't want to go too far into the weeds because I don't want to confuse people. But ultimately, there were some discussions, and that stuff was handled fairly quickly and fairly quietly by Michelle Roberts. And this is where I feel like Major League Baseball has a problem. It's like Tony Clark, for whatever it's worth, he's not a lawyer like Michelle Roberts, right? He doesn't have that kind of negotiating background that she does. I think that is part of the problem, is that Major League Baseball's players union needs a Donald Fear. You know what I'm saying? Like, they need a Michelle Roberts. You know, they need someone like that who can negotiate for them and say, hey, guys, look, I got this crap. I almost cursed. And just let me handle it. Like, you put me in this position for a reason.
But I don't know that that's what Tony Clark's best skill is. I know Tony a little bit. Tony Clark was not a superstar. Tony Clark, and he was not a pitcher. Tony Clark was an everyday guy in the major leagues.
First baseman for the Tigers and the Diamondbacks,
There are more of those guys than there are the people at the top scale of this. And that's what the problem is, in my opinion, with how the owners are presenting this. They're trying to divide every man in the league with the top players in the league, and they're doing it in, you know, the court of public opinion. If you're going to just say, I wish it were more behind closed doors, you have to blame the owners in that situation. You can't both sides at that point fairly in terms of the intellectual argument. In my opinion, I understand the emotional appeal for just please play baseball. Lord knows that I miss the ball games more than anybody, you know, but I also understand because, you know, we interact with the players and everybody at every level of this, that they just can't put themselves on the front line for less than what they are obviously worth just because the owners are bellyaching about it. It isn't fair. Never mind whether or not it's right or wrong. Those are two separate matters.
Speaking of finances, there was a story this week in Playboy that Reggie Bush was quoted in. Now, he's since kind of said that he was taken out of context, which I could understand. Based on the quote that was put out there. And it was about colleges paying athletes. And the quote that was put out there was that guidance is the one thing that young athletes coming through college miss the most. I missed out on it. They're about to start paying college athletes. This is something that has never been experienced before, and it's going to destroy some people if their foundation is not in the right place. Now, that was blown up into him saying that, you know, it was almost portrayed as a reason to not pay college athletes, which is what his point was. Yes, you should. You just have to be careful because you need to be able to teach these kids fiscal responsibility too, on top of paying them. Like, that needs to be part of the equation, which I agree with. And I'm curious to see where you stand, because you and I have never actually had this discussion
about Reggie,
And just paying college athletes and just the the additional stuff that he's talking about guidance and fiscal responsibility. And if you're going to do this, which I think eventually we'll get there because we've started the first step about paying people for their likeness, I do think that it's important that these big time programs create opportunities, whether it's part of an academic curriculum or even just as like a group setting that can be done in an extracurricular situation, about teaching these guys in a symposium style fashion, hey, you got to be responsible with this money that you're going to be making moving forward.
Yeah, I don't know that everything he's saying was just about players, though. I mean, I think that when you talk about fiscal responsibility around people making money in terms of college athletics, you've got to talk about just as much the boosters and the people that would be providing the money.
That's fair.
As anything. You know, and Reggie might not have been intending to make that point, but I think that's as important as most things involving the student athletes, because we know that's where the typical abuse comes from. Those with the money abusing those who they are giving it to for the purposes of their, you know, their own desire. Now, that being said, I happen to live in a world where I think, frankly, Reggie Bush, all this other crap, didn't do anything wrong. You know, athletes should get paid. So what? He got a house. It wasn't going to change Fresno State's defense when he was running all over them and making guys spin up and down in the secondary. You know, I happen to be of that particular opinion. Now, that being said, I think it's a little weird to hear this message from Reggie, considering he ended up giving back a Heisman, but he's certainly not wrong. And that is what is most important here, is that I'm not going to, you know, sully the messenger when I'm talking about NCAA sports in general, because that pool is so poisoned as is. He's right. If the money gets introduced in a way that people don't recognize is going to be responsible, well, then you're going to have a potential for abuse. And that's not a problem in itself, outside of whether or not it affects what becomes the experience for these kids. If kids want to go to college because they want to be able to play sports and have whatever fraternization they have, okay. If they want to be able to do it to go to the pros and not have to worry about all these other foolish rules that hold them back, that should be an option too. I don't think we have to live in a world where we're so binary on what the choices are. There should be equal lanes for people, sure, who want to be compensated for certain things and other kids who can do things otherwise. This, to me, can all exist. There's plenty of money to go around, as we can see from what all the college presidents are saying they're losing by not having it overall.
Right. And here's the other thing, as far as the likeness situation is concerned. Look, there could be money there to be made for everyone if the video game stuff becomes a thing again, right? Like, yeah. Like, I don't know about you. I miss me some NCAA football on EA Sports.
That game was tight.
Yeah.
I love that game.
Yeah, but
great
that
game.
That's an easy way for guys to get at least a few bucks, right? Like, some guys more than others, depending on, who's on the cover and things of that nature,
sure,
right? But I do think it's an easy way for everyone in Division I college football to make money. But not everyone's going to make the same kind of money.
That's fine. That's just like regular America.
Correct.
You know
correct.
What I'm saying?
And that's why I'm good with it.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And so while Reggie as a messenger is oddball, I get how that rubs some people the wrong way.
Well, see, I disagree. I think it actually makes sense because he's been through the grinder, right? Like,
that's
I
fair.
Think he understands it better than anyone.
That's probably true, but I'm saying from the standpoint of somebody who obviously benefited from it in the short term, I think that people look at that and say, well, if you thought that then, why did you react the way you did at that time, to which I would say, well, he's a young kid.
Right.
If somebody says, here, I'm going to give you a house to play running back for USC, I'm saying yes every time.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, this is America, as we stated before. So, without getting into the judgment of what he did, I think his message is absolutely correct. And if I am going to get into the judgment, I don't blame him. They should be getting paid anyway, and all these rules are BS as is.
Yeah, at 35, Reggie Bush can look back on it with having gone through it, right? And the actual experience of having gone through the grind of college football and everything that came with the fame and, the money, right? That he, or the house or whatever that he was given. And I think that he can add a perspective that can be just, honestly, I look at it as it's the most beneficial perspective that one could have, potentially.
It's probably true. He's got the most credibility in this regard because he's been on both sides. And at the end, he sort of made an interesting point about his own personal situation, which is that the money runs out. You know what I mean? And you got to learn something. That was actually very brave on his part just to be so specific about it in terms of how it affects his life, not just everybody else out there.
Not that I'm equating him to this person, but it's sort of similar in a way to when Jose Canseco became the most credible person about steroids in Major League Baseball,
Right.
I'm not talking about their characters. I'm talking about those specific circumstances.
Exactly. So I applaud Reggie Bush for being honest about that. And, maybe we'll see if anybody takes it into account,
Yeah. By the way, have you seen Jose Canseco's recent tweets?
Bruh. Computer Dream Inception or whatever he got going on. What is even happening with that? I want to sign up. Sign me up.
So a couple of days ago, for people that don't know, Jose Canseco tweeted this. If you can control your dreams, you can live a perfect life, whatever you wanted at any time with no restrictions. Contact Morgan if you're interested. And a follow-up tweet shortly thereafter where he wrote, 6-week seminar on how to control your dreams. Once you get your master's degree, you'll be put in an induced coma for whatever time you choose to enter your controlled dream life. Contact Morgan if you're interested. Now, look, while that all sounds fun and interesting, and yes, the idea of Inception, I just don't know if I'm going to go with Jose Canseco recommending anyone in that particular instance.
I was with you all the way until induced coma.
Yeah.
I don't really play that game when it comes to what I like to call leisure or fun. Mm-hmm. Induced coma, not on the list, Playboy.
Yeah, I'm with you wholeheartedly. Clint, thanks for stopping by, man. Always appreciate it.
I have a fire extinguisher to go destroy. Not even extinguisher. Whatever this thing is called, an alarm.
Fire alarm.
It's ruined
yes.
my day. I'll
yes.
see you all later. Thank you
all
for dealing with it.
Take care. See ya. All right, coming up next, the worst call in college sports history. And the NBA is going to bring the family. We'll tell you about all that next. Sedano, back in 2 minutes, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN, presented by Progressive Insurance. Get your home quote at progressive.com. Thanks to Clint Yates for stopping by. Thanks to Jeff Passan for stopping by. Mike Trudell will join us in 25 minutes, so stick around for that. I want you guys to hear some stuff about the NBA allowing families in the bubble. Chris Haynes, Yahoo Insider, had some insight on that. We'll get to that in a second. But I do my best on this show, because we're on in LA, to not talk about things that don't pertain in some way, shape, or form to LA. But occasionally people will ask me about stuff that happened in other places that I've worked. And I'm a fan just like you. So you know what? Like, I like watching USC. I've always been a huge fan of USC. I've always felt like they've been kind of like my West Coast team, particularly when the Pete Carroll years were going on. Bergman, you and I worked together back then. We were always talking about USC and Pete and Reggie and Matt Leinart and those teams. I was always a big fan. Like, I continue to be a big fan. And I've become a fan of Clay. I know not you guys. You guys are not all fans of Clay Helton. I've become friendly with Mike Bone, who I think is cool. I know Key has had some issues with him this morning. I heard that. But
I love Clay, by the way. As a UCLA fan,
I'm sure you do.
To be there forever. Yeah. He's a great guy, really nice, is great for that football team.
Yeah, stop. I see what you're doing there. Don't be silly. He is a nice man.
Sorry.
He's a great man. Be nice silly. To that man. So anyway, I root for him. I hope they win. I hope they win big this year because I like him. I want him to be around. Listen, I'm telling you what. If it becomes someone else who comes in for Clay, you may get better results quickly, but you may pay for it down the road, is all I'm saying. I've been pretty staunch on that stuff. But anyway, tonight, ESPN on Thursdays at 4 o'clock, they replay a classic college football game. And a couple weeks ago, remember they played the Reggie Bush game, the Texas Vince Young versus USC game. And we talked about that and the pain that people were feeling talking about that week. Well, I'm going to feel some pain tonight because they're playing Ohio State Miami, which to me is the most egregious error an official has ever made with that pass interference. Basically at the end of regulation, they called a pass interference literally as the fireworks were going off and the scoreboard said back-to-back national champions, okay? And ripped away, stole a championship from my favorite college football team. So I'm going to relive that, and I'm going to stew while watching all of that. But I contend that it is the worst call I've ever seen in a game. Like, the worst. Bergman, do you have a worst call for a team that you rooted for, that you were like, I can't believe that win against my team?
Yes, it was in 1998, and it was UCLA versus Miami, and Edgerrin James ran for 300 yards and destroyed UCLA's
terrible defense.
No, 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 no. There is a call coming. The call was that there was a receiver, that Cade McNown hit a receiver over the middle, and he had his knee. It was either that his knee was or was not
wasn't
down.
Wasn't down, right.
Yeah, it wasn't down when it was, and that can change the entire game and ended the game when the UCLA probably would have come back and won.
I mean, probably.
It was egregious.
I don't know. I mean,
no, Cade McNown was throwing for like 400 or 500 yards. He was that was the best offense in the nation at that time. And that's not even hyperbole. UCLA had the best offense in the nation. And for that call to happen, it was
Melsby, right?
Melsby, yes. Brad Melsby. Yes, yeah. That's exactly who it was.
Yeah. The replay showed that his knee was down, though.
It was not.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can just watch the tape. So you thought that. I mean, but that's not anywhere near throwing a flag 5 seconds later at the end of regulation.
I mean, it was still an egregious.
That was your time. That was your chance. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That was the national championship game. They were going to go be in the BCS national championship game. They were
the best
team in the country.
One of my worst evaluations of a quarterback ever, Cade McNown. I thought Cade McNown was going to be a good pro. I thought he was the next Steve Young.
I thought he was going to be amazing too. I don't know if it had to do with the Bears or it was just him himself, but yeah, it did not work out in the NFL for Cade McNown.
Yeah, I thought, oh, this is the next Steve Young. Because in college, you're right, he was a baller.
It was insane. That was the most fun I had watching UCLA sports, or football at least, in I don't know how long, or maybe ever. And for him to just flame out in the NFL was very,
it probably was ever. They really haven't been that good since, right?
Yeah.
Like they had a couple of good years with Jim Mora. They had the 10-win season with Mora, right? What was the kid?
Right, with Brett Hundley.
Yeah, the quarterback, right, Hundley, that went to Green Bay. I don't know. 877-710-ESPN. The worst call against your team that you literally threw something around the room. By the way, when I was young, when I was a kid, not as an adult, I haven't done this. I shouldn't say that. I've just been smarter about it. When I was a kid one time living with my parents, I was watching, it was like an NFL game. I don't remember which game it was. It was probably like a Dolphins game. But I remember being so mad that I launched my remote control and I broke it like on the wall. And like my dad, I grew up in a Hispanic household. Laura can attest to this. Like your dad is the scariest person around. Like that's just the reality of the case in most Hispanic households. So like all I could hear was the recliner close and then the stomping, walking down the hall. And I was like, oh crap, I am in deep trouble. And he was like, what the bleep were you doing? Why are you throwing things? Why are you breaking things? You know what? You're not getting a remote control. You got to stand up and change the damn channel from now on. So, and he did. Eventually, I did save up enough money with my own job to buy a new remote control. But yes, I've had some of those moments. As an adult, I've had less of them. And usually if I throw the remote, I make sure to throw it at like the couch where nothing is going to break or anything like that. I haven't done that since I've had kids, though. I try my best to just, contain the energy because I could scare them.
Yeah, that 1998 game that I was just talking about, that was the only time that I went into my room after that and I had a protractor. I was 13 years old.
A protractor?
Yeah, a protractor. I was in school, and there was a protractor in my room, and I threw it at my wall and made this gigantic dent in the wall. Ooh. And then I fell on the bed and started crying. I've never cried over sports since that, but that was the one that like it just tore me apart.
Oh, that's funny. Laura, have you ever thrown a remote?
Oh my God, 100%. My mom, when the Lakers used to play or the Dodgers, any team that I love, my mom's like, you can't have the remote and don't have shoes around you because I would throw my shoes at the TV. She's like, nada, you can't have nothing around you.
I feel like that, I feel like the throwing thing, like you can't, I mean, you can hurt somebody. That's the reality of it. Like you can't do that. So 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. What is the worst call ever against your team? Hit us up, 877-710-3776. Chris Morales just texted and he said, I spit out coffee. Protractor? Yeah, that was not what I was expecting to hear either, which is why I said a
Right. I mean, that was, you used it in math class.
I mean, you can kill someone with that thing.
Right. It was me alone in my room, thankfully, and I threw it. And it just, there was a big old dent. Yeah, it was bad.
I mean, what the hell is wrong with you? It's like a like a ninja star, basically, you're throwing at the wall.
I was upset, George. This, you understand why? Oh, best team God. In the yeah, country. Yeah. It still hurts.
Well, it's been a long time, too, so I get
that.
Doesn't
matter. All right. Still 877-710-ESPN.
So the NBA, they've got a lot of things going on, including this ridiculous World Cup proposal. It's silly. Like, just let's move on. I love soccer, but that's too radical for the NBA. Do the play-in stuff. It's very simple. They do it in the NCAA. Basketball fans know what it is. It's not that hard to figure out if you want to do something out of the box, right? But the other thing that's been discussed is now families in the bubble. So Ramona Shelburne and Woj, right after, minutes after we got off the show, you're holding back, Shelburne. What happened to Mama Momo Wednesdays? You were holding back on us. Just kidding. So it was booty day. So I don't want to, you know, I know there was a lot of things going on yesterday. You know, there was booty day. Like, you know, she had the story coming out. So anyway, there's talk about families in the bubble. Now, I know that that was an issue with Major League Baseball. They did not want to do that. The NBA seems to be more lenient on that. And it won't be initially, right? It'll be once teams start getting eliminated, they will allow some of the teams, maybe for like the conference finals or whatever, and the finals, obviously, to be around their respective family members. I don't know how I feel about that. Like, I think it makes sense, but Chris Haynes of Yahoo Sports was on ESPN Radio yesterday, and he's been talking to some players who feel like, I guess that's come up with some mixed reviews. Let's hear what Haynes has to say.
There are some players who don't feel comfortable bringing their family members to this bubble. You know, I don't want to name names, but, you know, then there's obviously players who, if they feel like they're going to be in this bubble for up to 2 months, if their team, you know, has the opportunity to go the distance, you know, they don't want to be without their family for that long of a period of time. And so, It's mixed reviews when you talk to multiple players on, you know, just having the family along during this campus isolated restart of a season. But, you know, I definitely think it's something that is definitely worth looking into and seeing what's the best protocol to see if they can have their family in place. Because two months, if you are a team that's expected to go a distance, 2 months is a long time to be without your family.
Bergman, would you want to bring your family if you were an NBA player?
I mean, it depends on the type of NBA player that I am.
Really? What is that? I mean,
well, like, you know.
Are you saying if you're like a single guy? Of course.
I mean, maybe, right.
Well, I'm just talking about if you have like an actual family.
Yeah,
like
then, yes. Then yes, I want to bring my family. I want them to be with me. Yes, 100%.
Okay. Because I think that, look, there are some things there, right? What if there's a, like, the challenge is what if there's a spread, right? And, like, then all of a sudden your family is susceptible. You know what I mean? Like, I think that there's that. What if they bring in something into the bubble? Now, my understanding is everybody who goes, whether it's family members, players, staff, et cetera, even media, the few media that may be allowed in the bubble, they're all subjected to the testing protocols each and every day, like every single person that would be on a team. So there is that. Do you want to subject your family to that? Like, they're basically going to shove that thing up to your brain, bro. Like, are you cool? Like, how are your kids going to react to that? You know?
No. Yeah, geez, the kids would not do well with that. What about you, though? Like, would you bring your family into the bubble? Do you want your family there? That's it. Because you're probably going to go to the bubble.
I don't know. It probably is not a good word to describe it. I don't know if I'm going to go at all. It is a possibility. I don't know. Sure. I have discussed this with my family. I would be going alone.
Right. That was what you guys thought that was best for you and your family was for you to go solo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. If I end up going, it would be best for me to go solo.
All right.
Because
fair enough.
I go, I'm going to be there working all day. Like, I don't have time. Like, I'm not going to have a lot of downtime, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I kind of like the idea of coming back to my family. I mean, my family is, you know, hugely important to me, and being around my daughters and the rest of the family, you know, that's important to me. So coming home to that every day, even if I'm working the whole time, I think is outweighs it personally.
Yeah. Laura, what would you do? Would you bring your family with you, or would you be a little hesitant about that?
No, I would leave them home. I'll just go by myself. And because you're right, you bring your family, you bring them to an environment that they could potentially get sick. So I'd rather them stay at home.
Yeah, like I'll let you behind the curtain. Like, well, I talked to my wife about it, And she said that, yeah, like she gets it that if I have to go, I go. And we've decided that I would go alone. And that, you know, if there is some sort of reason for me to stay back for another 2 weeks because of needing to quarantine or whatever, then so be it. I would just drive to Miami from Orlando. It's 3.5 hours and stay at my place there and then fly back, you know, after that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know if necessary. You know what I mean? Like, we've talked about all the possibilities. So I think that you have to just – like I can understand why there would be mixed reviews about all this stuff.
Yeah, I can understand why people want them there, want their family there as well. So
yeah. All right. We've got people on hold here that want to talk about all the stuff we've discussed. Let's go to Jamie in Santa Ana. What's up, Jamie?
Hey, I'm George. It's Jaime Garcia.
Jaime. What's up, Jaime?
Yeah, no problem. Hey, I was just wanted to comment on the things you guys were talking about. I think my – favorite blown call, being a Raider fan, diehard Raider fan, first of all was the Brady one, but the second one was that last one when the guy puts the little piece of paper in between the football. That had to be the worst.
Oh man, yeah. I mean, listen, the Raiders have a number. I'm surprised. I mean, look, the tuck rule game, right? Like that one, obviously. You know, I would be furious. You know, I mean, man. Bergman, what was the tuck rule game like for you? That wasn't that far after you crying about UCLA and throwing no. a protractor. It was only no. like 2 or 3 years later.
Yeah, it was. That was one of the most egregious calls of all time as well. But, I mean, when it comes down to sports, UCLA is pretty much at the top of my list. So everything else, like the Raiders, as much as that was extremely painful, the UCLA one was worse for me. But that was – the tuck rule was just – talk to Charles Woodson. He's still not over it either.
Oh, I wouldn't be. I'd be furious if I were Charles Woodson. Let's go to Sean in Northridge. Sean, what do you got?
One of the worst calls that wasn't called, I think, was Vince Young's knee down in the Rose Bowl against USC.
Yeah.
Everyone knows his knee's down. I will cry every day the rest of my life. I was 13, crying, heartbroken, waiting for a three-peat from my USC Trojans.
Oh yeah, that one's tough. Thanks for the call, Sean. Stay safe. And Jaime, you too. Do you believe his knee was down, Bergman?
No, I don't think that his knee was
down. Now, is that UCLA boy talking?
I mean, a little bit, but I would have to go. I have to go back and look at it. I remember when it was all going down. I did not think that it was down. I'd have to look at it again to be sure. But like USC has gotten away with a lot, like the Bush push against Notre Dame. That was a bad call to not be called as well. That got them into the championship.
I mean, his knee was down. Like, you know that story? Do you know the story about that? Like, okay, so in that game, the video replays showed that Vince's knee was down. Like, it hit the ground before he pitched the ball to Selvin Young, who ran for the touchdown. But the replay crew never saw the video because they had the wrong television feed hooked up to one of those monitors.
So the
TV audience saw the right video replay, and the college football official replay booth had the wrong video hookup.
How is that possible? How could that? How do you allow something like that to happen? How do you?
Yeah,
not
I didn't know you didn't know that story. I didn't know. I thought you guys all. Did you know that story, Laura? Did you know about that or no?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I'm surprised more people didn't know about that. That was like somebody wrote about that years later.
I'm sure I have to see. I have to actually see it for myself. I don't think his knee was down.
No, his knee was down. For sure his knee was down. No, right. Sean is right about that. There's no doubt. His knee was down. 877-710-ESPN. Z in West LA. What up, Z?
Hey, what's up, George? How's everybody doing?
All good, brother. Hope you're good.
Thank you. Worst blown call, in my opinion, is the Vikings and the Saints in 2009. I'm not saying that there was any particular blown calls, but I'm going to take it back to when the Rams and the Saints played, and that call didn't get called on the Rams for that pass interference. We're just going to have to tie those two together and call that the Saints got what they deserved.
There you go. All right, Z, take care,
George,
man.
One other.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we dropped. Sorry, man. Damn it. Tell him to call back and ask you, Laura, if what he wanted on the other side, and then we'll just address it for him off the air. Alex in Laguna Beach. What's up, Alex?
What's going on, guys?
Hey,
by far, my number one bad beat is the fail Mary against the Seahawks as a Packer fan.
Without a doubt, the worst.
Oh, well, dude, Aaron Rodgers was so mad. I've never seen him just that angry. So Michael Silver, who writes, I think he used to write for Yahoo at the time, but I know he works for the NFL Network, like did a whole story. Like he was the one guy that spoke to Rodgers after that. And Rodgers was just incensed. Like you could see them walking off the field together. It was crazy. I remember that. Yeah, I vividly remember how that unfolded. So yeah, I could see that one.
I watched it with a Seahawks fan who just swore, nope, touchdown, touchdown, touchdown. And that's all when 12th man became all of a sudden a huge thing for him, and it blew my mind and just drove me crazy.
Oh, yeah, that would drive me nuts. These are all good. You guys have done a really good job. Thanks for the call, Alex. Stay safe. 877-710-ESPN. We're talking about the worst bad beats or the worst blown calls or whatever, because tonight, you know, near and dear to my heart, my Miami Hurricanes had their sixth national championship stolen from them by a referee named Terry Porter, who threw the flag of pass interference 5 seconds almost later after the play. Guys were celebrating. The fireworks were going off. The scoreboard at the Fiesta Bowl said back-to-back national champions. Like, the guys ran on the field. Tostitos were being popped everywhere because it was the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl. There was literally Tostitos everywhere on the field, like, because guys were opening bags. It was awful. Like, awful. Awful.
That was a really, really bad call. I remember that just being like, what is that? Another one that I just thought about, too, was Rocket Ishmael, when he got, they had the chipping call when he had, yeah. it was a college football where he ran back for a touchdown.
Yeah, that was
a bad call.
Well, I mean, you could go back in soccer. There's plenty. There's the hand of God, right? Like that play. Like there's a bunch.
Oh, yeah.
Like even in soccer. Now, Laura, you mentioned one, right? There's El Tri, right, in 2014.
Yeah, yeah. So the guy, the Dutch player that flopped, that, you know, that meme that went around because Mexico lost because of the penalty they gave him. I'm not even a soccer fan, and I was like, yo, that was such a bad call. I'm not.
Yeah. Let's go to David in South Pasadena. What's up, David? How's South Pass going?
What's up, Georgie? Hey, Ben's up, baby. Laura, you just took my back call away from me.
Oh, it was the one against Mexico and the Netherlands?
No era penal. No era penal, baby.
There you go.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy, man. That's crazy. That's crazy. Hey, everyone in Pasadena okay?
Yeah, sir. I actually work here at South Pasadena Care Center. We're one of the frontliners. I'm the maintenance director, and the whole community is contributing. We're all good. We're safe. The curve is flattening down, and I just love listening to your show, man. Fins up, baby. Fins up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're a Dolphins fan. I like that. Yeah, thank you, man. And thank you for what you guys do. There's no question. For all the frontline folks, speaking of which, ESPN Radio here on 710, presented by Progressive Insurance. But we want to thank and salute all of our frontline workers as part of our Thank You Thursdays. That's today. Presented by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Here's the deal. And we're going to start doing this next week, right? So if you know someone who's working, like our man right there, David in South Pass, right? Who is a healthcare provider or any other kind of frontline worker, police or firefighter or a food service professional, you can nominate him or her today. Here's how you do it. Email us at ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. So that email address again is ESPNLAMarketing@ESPN.com. Send us their first and last name, city, and their occupation. Or you can post a short video on Instagram or Twitter that includes the hashtag 710ThankYouThursdays. Again, hashtag 710 Thank You Thursdays. Every Thursday, we'll interview a frontline worker and award them a $500 thank you gift package, basically, to include $200 service to Valvoline Instant Oil Change, $100 gift card to Wingstop and VSLiquor.com, and $100 Shooteria gift card. Cat Footwear is also available at Shooteria. So we're going to be doing that. Let me grab Andres, who's listening online on the app. What's up, Andres?
What's going on, George? Long-time listener, big-time fan.
Thank you, bud. Lifelong
49er fan. I don't know if you remember the 2014 NFC Championship game when Navarro Bowman recovered the fumble that was not reviewable.
Oh, yeah. And he got hurt on the play, right?
Yep. Tore up his knee. Yep. He was never the same after that.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's a good one, man. Thank you for the call, man. Stay safe, okay? All right. Coming up next, Alex Caruso, the Caruso. Says the season is a failure if the Lakers don't win. Mike Trudell, we'll ask him about that and more. He's joining us in 3 minutes. Stick around. Sedano, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. If you missed any one of our interviews today, Clint Yates, Jeff Passan stopped by, And if you miss anyone, really, at any point, you can go back for months on the podcast, on the interview on demand section for the Sedano Show podcast on the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts or Google, wherever you find your podcast. Brought to you by Capital One Saver Card. Earn 4% cash back on dining and entertainment, 2% at grocery stores, and 1% on all of the purchases. What's in your wallet? Friend of the program, everyone's favorite sideline reporter, Mike Trudell, joins us now here. Trudell, I got a number of things. Like, I got a laundry list of stuff to hit you on, stuff we've been talking about today during the show, stuff that's happened throughout the last couple of weeks that we got to talk to you about and get your opinion on. But first and foremost, as I text you, we need to talk about this porn stash you've got going on. What in God's earth is that on your face?
Yeah, you see, the way that you're approaching this subject, it leads me to believe that you think the same thing as my wife, which is that it's terrible. Now, I have gotten that perspective from some of my high school friends, sort of just texting me like, dude, what are you trying to do? But I have found the majority of people that don't know me that well are kind of enjoying it, maybe for comedic purposes. Yes. I know my big boss at the Lakers seemed to like it, so that was a plus. You know, I'm not going to pretend, I'm not going to lie and tell you that I think it looks good. I mean, I know it doesn't look good, but it is kind of fun. And that's really what I'm going for.
Oh, it's definitely fun. Like, I love it for my own comedic purposes, but I'm just like, good, because I know your wife. So I know there's no way she likes that thing on your face.
No, doesn't love it. Nope. And it's just one of those things, like, I've never had the occasion or opportunity to really grow out facial hair, and it doesn't come in that fast for me, you know, shockingly. So I just wanted to see what it would look like. And you know, if you haven't seen it, you're listening right now, why are you guys talking about Trudell's face this much? It is kind of jarring. So you can see it on my Instagram right now, or I think the Lakers
and on your Twitter. Yeah. I saw it on your Twitter, and I saw it on the Lakers Twitter, because yesterday the Lakers were doing something really cool and you were a part of it. Kobe's last game, the farewell game, was airing on ESPN last night, and they had a bunch of like cool posts on Twitter about people remembering that game and that moment, and you were part of that too.
Yeah, it was a bunch of cool people, and then also me. You know, David Beckham and James Worthy and, you know, Larry Nance Jr. and on and on down the line, Sue Lance, you know, Adam Levine, et cetera. So, my recollection, though, of the night, I figured everybody else would talk about the game. I mean, I did the pregame interview with Kobe, and so I got to see him, with his family, kind of in the back area, and just him taking all of that in, even all of the stuff before he even got out to the court, the last time that he walked into the locker room, the last pregame interview that he did, talking about what he was going to do with his wife the next day and what he was going to do with his kids that weekend. So that kind of stuff was special for me to witness, and then he went out and dropped 60. So it was quite a night.
Yeah, and then you talked about the post-game interview, which I thought was cool too, right?
So the interview that I did with him one-on-one was pre-game. So the post-game, he did the press conference, and the on-the-court thing with Mamba out thing.
How do you think Kobe would have reacted to your porn stash?
Well, this is the other sneaky sort of reason that I haven't shaved the mustache, is that it is something that players either enjoy or like to use as an icebreaker. You know, I always was a little bit envious of, I thought Craig Sager, you know, one of the legendary sideline reporters, of course, of all time, or just reporters and journalists in general. I thought the reason that he really wore all the suits like that was because they were, one part of it was that he had this zany, like, cool personality. The other part was that it was this great icebreaker with the players and sort of something they could make fun of him about, something they could sort of break the ice and get to the next thing. So, you know, look, I'm not saying the mustache can get to that level of prominence, and I don't want to get trapped into having to wear it for the rest of my life and never shave it again. But, you know, it is something that when I've done these Instagram lives with players on the Lakers and stuff, they all seem to enjoy it to some extent. Maybe it's the same way that you enjoy it because it looks bad. Maybe they actually think it makes me look like I'm not a teenager anymore, which sort of helps. So either way, George, so far, you know, despite you and my wife and my high school friends not liking it, I have gotten more positive feedback than you may have imagined.
Well, I'll tell you this. I think you've just convinced me. I think you should roll with it. I think you should roll with it once we get back to whatever we're getting back to. I think you should roll with it for a while. Use it as an actual test case, like when we're back on TV, and I want to see the reaction. I think you may be onto something, Trudeau. Hey, look, I'm going to be honest. It's why I went with the turtleneck. The turtleneck was a conversation piece. Every player I ran into when I was wearing one of those turtlenecks was commenting on the turtleneck in one way, shape, or form.
Well, yeah, I mean, that obviously wasn't a fashion choice. That looked horrible. But yes, icebreaker for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, go with the turtleneck. Bring it back. And by the way, Dwayne Wade and a bunch of players then started to steal my shine, trying to take the turtleneck from me. Let's not forget
that. Somebody that you took the ascot. Oh, no, well, not the ascot. Jax wore the ascot, but somebody else was rocking some turtlenecks, no?
Well, players started rocking turtlenecks after the fact. Yes.
No, but I'm saying before you did. So you're saying that you were the first person in sports to rock the turtleneck out of the suit.
I'm trying to think. Like, well, I mean, The Rock wore a turtleneck, like in that famous meme. Jalen Rose. Jalen Rose wore one. He was the first person I saw on NBA Countdown to wear one. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to rock that because it would look a lot funnier on me than it looked. It looks cool on Jalen. It would look funny on me.
Yeah, touche. Right. Yeah.
So you go. So I'm with you. All right. So before I get to Alex Caruso's comments, which I thought were interesting, I'd love to get your thoughts on that. And I want to get to Damian Lillard's comments about LeBron, too. But we were just talking about how tonight is going to be a rough night in the Sedano household, because every Thursday on ESPN, they replay a classic college football game. And in tonight's classic college football game at 4 Pacific, they will air Ohio State defeating Miami in the 2003 Fiesta Bowl in what I believe it is the worst call in sports history. Certainly in college sports history, but arguably in sports history, where a official threw a flag on a pass interference call as the fireworks were going off, as the scoreboard said back-to-back champions, as the players were running on the field with their Tostitos bags for the Tostita Fiesta Bowl, Tostitos all over the grass. 5 seconds later, a flag comes in. I think it's the most egregious call ever. The most painful call ever for me as a fan. What is the call? The most egregious call in Mike Trudell's fandom. The one that it just sent you over the top. You flipped out. It could be the Vikings. It could be a basketball-related one. Just give me that moment. Take me into Trudell's life where the call was made on the field and you lost your bleep.
Yeah, I don't have in my sports fandom life, I don't have one of those plays like, you know, where the Sacramento Kings complained about the Lakers getting calls in a game or like the one that you just mentioned in a football game. Like the thing that really ruined my sports fandom life was the missed field goal from Gary Anderson in 98. So like that was self-inflicted harm. It wasn't there wasn't something that was caused by an official or a ref. Now, I can say that I was the beneficiary of one of these calls, like in 91, the World Series with the Twins and the Braves, when Kent Herbeck kind of gently, you know, moved Ron Gant off the base. So that might be one for anybody that's an Atlanta Braves fan. But I was on the victory end of that one.
Yes.
Man, I'm not here to whine about calls. Calls happen.
Hey, you back up.
I'm here to complain about other stuff.
You back up, whine. There's no whining. You've never seen someone celebrate on the field and 5 seconds later a flag come in. I am going to be angry tonight. Hey, I have let people know in this house.
Was it a foul or not?
No, it was not. He got there as the ball got there, damn it.
But those plays happen.
I've already said to the family here, expect a grumpy dad today around 7 o'clock Pacific when that game is ending. So anyway, let me ask you about Alex Caruso's comments. I thought they were, I love it. I love the boldness from the Caruso. He says, and I quote, "The Lakers season would be a failure if they don't win a championship." What say you, Mike Trudell?
Well, that's nothing new, right? That's something that we've heard basically from everybody on the team since they put the team together. And, you know, once you got Anthony Davis next to LeBron and a bunch of veterans, those guys aren't playing for second place. And so I think that's something that's been permeating through the roster from the start. And the only thing to me that's been a surprise this year was how quickly they were able to establish this chemistry with the new coaching staff, with all the new players. But the talent, like I was surprised in the offseason that more people weren't picking them to win the title, like you and I were. Like, just look at the roster. Like, look at the talent. They have a lot, and they've got the best player in the game still, and they've got the best, second best player on a team. So yeah, I mean, I to me, George, that's nothing new. That's how they should be feeling, and I don't think that changes regardless of what the postseason structure might be if they're able to return.
Speaking of that, what do you make? I know you're a big soccer guy. I am very anti the World Cup draw proposal. I am more the play-in proposal. It is something basketball fans understand because we see it in the NCAA tournament. I just feel like the what do you do when you advance? Like, are you drawing teams against each other? I've heard stuff about drafting teams after pool play. Like, I just am, as much as I like soccer, and I do, and I didn't play it like you, and I don't love it as much as you, but I do enjoy soccer. I just feel like that's too radical for the NBA. What do you think?
So I think the idea in its own right, if you separate it out from like this current context, I think it's a fun idea for like a mid-season type or a throughout the season type of a tournament. I do think that it's cool, but I want to say my disclaimer to all of this is that I'm just excited to be thinking and talking about actual return to play scenarios when, you know, I know it's not guaranteed yet, but that first of all, I my overall emotion out of this is excitement. Now, secondarily, though, I'm probably a little bit more of a traditionalist in the sense that when the season started, the rules that were agreed to, as they always had been, right, had been that the seeding was going to be 1-8, the West was going to meet the East. Like, all that was what was happening at the beginning of the season. So I have a hard time moving the goalposts on how you qualify, especially when almost 80% of the season was completed for most teams. In other words, it's a pretty big sample size. And yes, that would, in theory, that would make it more difficult for the teams like really just Portland, New Orleans, maybe San Antonio and Sacramento, who thought that they had a good chance of catching the 8th seed Grizzlies, who had a 3.5 game lead when everything stopped. So I get the gripe for those teams, but for everybody else, I think that it makes a little bit more sense just to keep the seeding as is, unless you can play enough of a regular season sample size and you can include some sort of parity and strength of schedule if it doesn't favor one team over the other. So that's a long-winded answer, George. But basically, I'm going to be – like, I'm just happy and excited that we're talking about potential return-to-play scenarios. But I think it might be a little bit much to try to institute something new when all really we want is to see these games and to get excited for basketball to be back.
That's fair. Damian Lillard was on Jalen and Jacoby yesterday and made his case for LeBron James as MVP, something you and I have discussed numerous times. Here's what Damian Lillard said on Jalen and Jacoby.
This season, I think, is LeBron. You know, they're number one team in the West. They've been consistent all year long. And for him to be at the age he's at with the amount of miles that he has on his body, how often he's talked about, you know, the pressure they put on him and every little thing that he does and the level he's performing at, I feel like, in my opinion, I think he's an MVP.
So you and I have been on, have had this discussion before. I think he's the MVP. If I had to vote for someone, I would vote for him. I think the West is still tougher. I think the number one seed in the West is something that still matters. I think that ultimately, as simple as this sounds, he has a better game than Giannis. Giannis still has holes in his game. As great as Giannis has been, he's had one of the most incredible seasons we've seen. If I had to pick one over the other, I'm still taking LeBron, and that's just kind of how I roll.
Well, so this is one of those arguments where I can make it on either side. My true opinion, though, is that LeBron was set to pass Giannis, and it would have been pretty easy to pass him because Giannis was going to miss 2 weeks. And LeBron and the Lakers had a good chance of passing the Bucks for the overall seeding lead in the NBA. They were about 2 games back. Milwaukee had a tough schedule coming up. The Lakers had the easiest part of their schedule in April eventually. So, like, that aside, George, the argument to me that's more interesting, and people will say, oh, look at the analytics, look at the advanced stats. Giannis has a higher PER. Everything else is slightly above. I shouldn't say everything else. Many other categories he has an edge or a slight edge in. But to me, the numbers are close enough to bring in some of the arguments that you were making, that Lillard was making, the intangible stuff. And ultimately, what is this about? Like, if guys are close enough statistically, give me the better player. I have the same feeling for all NBA, first team, second team, third team. I want it reflected that LeBron does remain a better all-around player than Giannis, because the point of the game still is to be able to create good shots late for your team and to be able to help on the other end. And he just still does that better than everybody. Giannis does have that big hole in his game where he doesn't have the jumper yet. We saw it play out when the Lakers beat the Bucks in March. And so those are all the reasons combined, I think, where I would lean towards LeBron also. But the biggest one is that he was gonna overtake him no matter what in those 2 weeks that Giannis was going to be out.
All right, brother. Thank you for stopping by. Stay safe. Much love to you and the family. And keep the stash going. You've convinced me.
Look, it's a fluid thing, George, but for now, it's safe.
All right.
That's just how it's going
to
be.
See you, brother. Thanks to Trudell. Thanks to Passan. Thanks to Clinton Yates. Thanks to Laura and Greg. Thanks to you guys for tuning in and calling in. We love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See you.